Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
That's Lily Holloman, affecting an accent.
Our voyage of love began. Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me.
Our love is like a ship on the ocean.
And I've always had your tender lips to keep me warm. Oh, I need to have the strength that flows from you. Don't let me drift away, my dear, when love can see me through.
Our love is like a ship on the ocean.
Although something tells me that a movie with rock in the title is not necessarily going to be one of Richard Fitzwilliam's number one choices today. Well, never mind. The Hughes Corporation, they're rocking that boat in a way that only they could. Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine.
That's what we like to hear, because clearly the rest of the world isn't. So there we are.
That, I think, is undoubtedly true. And also, of course, as you will have heard, the cinema has had a real blow with the delay again of 007's next movie.
Yeah. I mean, think of it a bit like the picture of Dorian Gray. By the time it gets released, Daniel Craig will be an ancient, withered, old individual, and people will say, well, that was his last Bond, of course.
I can only say it's very sad, but I mean, I can. I mean, I have to say this. Tenet was the, basically, we were watching it to see how it would perform, and it performed well in Europe insofar as cinemas, some of course aren't open, many of them are still pretty empty, but nonetheless they have been pushing it to the maximum amount that they could, and it was the opening of Tenet and its failure in the United States, I think, that basically meant that this was inevitable. I mean, it's very, very unfortunate, because next Easter is a long way away.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, deferred gratification can often be a useful line to pursue. And as we send our best wishes to the current occupant of the United States White House, and I mean that because I think it is important, just as we did with respect to Mr. Johnson, to acknowledge that this problem or whatever one's thoughts, etc., maybe you need to actually just acknowledge that being kind to each other is going to be one way in which we can sort out the mess that we're currently in, politically
indeed,
speaking.
Watch the presidential debate. But yes, one must hope. Must indeed hope that they recover. I where this leaves the election, the constitutional processes and all of this is not a matter for us here, but I mean, my goodness.
You may say that, Richard, but I'm sure Mr. Johnson is watching with eager eyes and wondering which he can actually use this to manipulate maybe an open-ended line whereby he could stay in Downing Street for, what, about 16 years? I don't know.
Well, far be it from me to comment on a challenging statement which would involve a knowledge of our constitution or unwritten constitution that I do not possess.
And at least we can turn around and say that even in the height of our verbal duels over Master and Commander, we never actually accused each other of being smart. That's very important.
That's right.
Exactly. So where we're going to go, I mean, would you like to start off with Artemisia?
Yes,
and go...
I just wanted to recommend this extraordinary exhibition. She was, until the last century, she was so-called forgotten as an artist, and the 17th century in Italy was, of course, a patriarchy, and her extraordinary achievements. She lived from 1593 to, it's thought, 1654, are documented, a lot of them in this exhibition at the National Gallery. First, to my knowledge, in this country that we recognize someone who for 40 years in her time was well known across Europe. She was the first member of the Florence Artists Academy, who was a woman, and when young, she was raped, and you indeed can see the transcript of the trial. Agostino Tassi was charged with this rape, and indeed she had to be tortured to basically to back up what she was saying, and that it was true. This was a pretty barbarous period. It has to be said that there are some of her love letters on display too, but when you see the paintings, I mean, some of the self-portraits are very fine. Also, you've got the extraordinary, the ferocious canvases, you could say her revenge canvases, is what they've been known as, of Judith beheading Holofernes, a famous story, which are quite hard to look at. And she specialized in portraying strong, powerful women, Susanna, the legend of Susanna and the elders, Cleopatra, Lucretia. And, of course, there's a violence, as I mentioned, with the beheading portrait. Also Jael and Sisera, another violent image in several of her paintings. It's a chronological exhibition, and it is one that is fascinating because it will introduce her to a huge audience. And also, it's very interesting that there's some large altar pieces from Naples. The initial, of course, she was in Florentine. Then there was Naples, and finally, she went to London, where she joined her father, who was also an artist, who was a portrait painter to Charles II. And then there's her famous self-portrait as an allegory of painting, which is one that many will know. So this is an exhibition at the National Gallery. It's until January, and I really do recommend it.
And in a socially distanced way, obviously, presumably.
Oh, indeed, of course. I mean, with masks, naturally. Yeah. But it obviously involves booking beforehand.
There you are. It's test, trace, and watch the pictures, or look at the images. I don't know. Strange times. Moving on. Your first movie selection is
Rocks, directed by Sarah Gavron, whose debut movie Suffragette was quite good, but not overly impressive. Whereas this is, it vibrates with youthful life, which is something that we need at the moment. Meet Shola, played by Bookie Bacray, She is known as Rox, which is the title of the film's eponymous hero. She is a black British teenager aged 16 who lives with her mother and younger brother, Emmanuel. A lively scene-stealing performance by Angelo Osei Kisiedu in the East London estate in Hackney, and they don't have much cash. But the challenge she faces is when her mother suddenly leaves home, totally abandoning them. She came from Nigeria, and where has she gone? So, obviously, Shola has to try and locate her mother, and whilst she is attempting to do this, of course, there's the problem with their social services waiting for them at their flat, she discovers, and also the fact that she has various friends. The center of this movie is a very, very supportive unit, multi-ethnic unit at school, and her best friend is a Somalian, Sunaya, played by Kirsa Ali, who initially we see her helping on the playground when she's bullied, and when she stays with her in her lavish home, it does show the enormous disparity of the middle-class school and of wealth that we see in our society. I mean, one of the fascinating aspects of this movie, it's imaginative, it uses photographs and footage shot from cameras on occasion, but visually, it's really sumptuous. I mean, the cameras of work is extraordinary. For a story that is, in point of fact, somewhat extremely tough, you could almost say that some of the visuals are so rich they is this danger of sentimentalizing it, but not at all. I did feel that it's the performances that lift it up. The use of music is extremely good. Visually, as I say, it's amazing. And it's one of those movies that is very, very joyous. So I really recommend this. And some very good supporting roles, the teachers, the social workers, the various other parts played by the schoolgirls. I mean, extremely good. So this is a movie that is a pleasure.
You see, Richard, I thought you were going to talk about geology and the formation of rocks and other things when you actually find details of rock information, facts, etc. Then I thought maybe it's ROX, as in rocks, as in Roxy Music. But neither of those was the actual routine. Instead, as you said, it's a movie directed by Sarah Gavron. Very confusing, though.
Well, titles sometimes are. And when we come to our next movie, talk about being confused. This movie wasn't actually originally meant to be released in cinema. It's a sequel to After, which was on Netflix, and it's directed, if that's the word, by Roger Kimball, and based on a new adult fiction novel, the sort of, cheap Mills and Boone stuff. But the reason I went to see...
Do I detect that you're not a fan of the Barbara Cartland oeuvre and possibly even the Jackie Collins, the late, great Jackie Collins, and her material, and maybe even Jilly Cooper?
Well, when I see you, because this I cannot do on air, I will recount what happened when Barbara Cartland and I met.
Mm.
But suffice it to say, I mean, this is really, really extraordinary. When they say you don't make the movies like this anymore,
thank goodness.
Exactly, because I really didn't think that they did. I mean, you remember the sort of movie, although this is the sex scenes in this, there are a few in the, but and there's a poster which has got a couple of them in the shower, but you remember 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, I try not to. I mean, I do have both 50 Shades and the sequel. Never quite got round to watching it as yet. I think I'm saving it for a day when I feel really I need a mood changer.
Absolutely. And I mean, it was a little tush, but I mean, this really, really is bad. A bad film. The ending is just so extraordinary that, I mean, I'm just tempted to a spoiler, but I can't.
How does it compare with Madonna's classic movie Body of Evidence back in the 80s?
I didn't see it.
Oh, dear. Well, there we are.
Well, not so dear as the case may be. But anyway, Tessa Young is played by Josephine Langford. She's an innocent and inexperienced fresher at college. She has a torrid romance with Hardin, played, oh, it's a relative of Rafe. Hero finds Tiffin, who can't act, but he can shout. She finds job with a publisher called Vance, and Vance has Trevor, played by Delaine Spruz, who has a fond dress for her. Oh dear, there are certain sex scenes in this movie, there are certain scenes of rowing in this movie. There are rather a
lot
of
can't do
rowing.
That in a COVID environment, Richard, that's all gone.
Shouting, I mean, this is one thing that Hero finds Tiffin does. He can't act, but he does shout. And so that, of course, is dangerous. You're quite right. I didn't feel other than exhausted by this thing because I was watching it on a
It's not going to get us back into the movie screens, is it, really? Back into the movie theatres?
No, but I was in a cinema with two other people, a giant cinema in the Cineworld in Leicester Square, and it really was a load of cobblers. I mean, there's a wonderful scene where once Tessa and Hardin have split up, then he suddenly decides to turn up at a flat with his mother, whom he hadn't told about the breakup. Now there's subtlety for you.
Mm.
Oh dear, yes, and when they get drunk, that's another thing.
And the title of this epic?
The title of this is called After We Collided, and I chose it because actually it's been a surprise. I won't say box office hit exactly, but it's done quite well in times when people presumably, and you can't blame them for this, obviously I thought the film was rubbish, but the script is really non-existent. The music, my God, the music is terrible. I mean, the music, as you know so well, can enrich a movie so much, and indeed, when there's a scene at Christmas and we have old Christmas tree, this is at Hardin's father's home, and Hardin is haunted by...
Are you suggesting that possibly Roger Cumble has had a tumble with this particular one?
Well, you've had to work hard to get a rhyme on that one. But then, when one's talking about a movie like this, it slows you down. You feel that, mediocrity is oppressive, hence your comment. It really, really...
Surely, though, when your hero is Fine Tiffin, or Fines Tiffin, I mean, it's just the name alone. You know, Tiffin is a wonderful relative of Rafe Fine, of course. It's genius, isn't it?
Really, he is apparently related, yes, yes. But that, believe me...
But he's not a fine actor, is that what you're saying?
God, yes, yes. I think this is at the level of the film.
I like to share these kind of lights, you know. I mean, I appreciate that not everything actually reached the awesomeness of Guy Ritchie's Man from U.N.C.L.E., but, you know, this is good.
It certainly it is. Oh, dear. I mean, if you've got this in a large screen, it really, really is extraordinary. But a few people wanting, you know, something different, it moves on a screen. Yes, it is a film. I have been going to see it, and
three in London alone, as you've just said.
Absolutely, there were two others in that cinema.
I mean, was it not a case of maybe the other two were just cinephile masochists?
I didn't ask them because of social distancing.
Of course.
No, well, it wasn't possible. But I mean, the odd thing is, it has apparently grossed quite well, because they didn't expect it to gross at all.
Yeah.
But then the real problem of getting people into cinemas, and I mean, it's the disaster in America that's, I mean...
Disney's already making lots of its staff redundant, so that's the end of that empire.
You mean Cineworld?
Cineworld and Disney, I think. Disney are also making a lot of the staff out of the whole system. Who knows?
It's a very, very difficult time indeed, and I'm sure the very last thing they wanted to do was to postpone the Bond movie. But
it probably was because they realised it wouldn't match up to the genius of After We Collided.
It could be indeed, but After We Collided is the sort of thing that really, truly, madly, deeply, I was sorry that I'd experimented. But, I mean, people were seeing it. They were.
But, of course, Alan Rickman in Truly, Madly, Deeply also reached heights that heretofore were unplugged in terms of the silver screen and ghosts.
Well, I mean, it's very difficult to compare anything with After We Collided because, as I say, I really didn't think that films of the sort, I mean, what's online, you get everything, but I really didn't think they did make them. license.
Wow.
And I mean, we really don't want any more. But there is a problem at the moment, of course, with all the big movies are being gradually postponed. I mean, some of them are being made. We know that Mission Impossible, that Jurassic World,
and the
Batman is that we know they're all being made at the moment. But when to release them?
Sometime in 2062, I would have thought would be safe.
It's a serious matter.
Archivist. Richard, when all's said and done, you know, we have to acknowledge that perhaps the adult pretenders of the world need to somehow realise that maybe, you know, it's important, but it's not the essential life things. Never mind. Or possibly, here's my thought, this is the cure for all, do more animation. That way you can actually socially distance your people in sound booths across the globe and simply have more animation.
Absolutely not, because as you know, I
you don't see animation.
Action,
I know.
So I would obviously oppose that, but it's the thought. Rather as though, you know, with the theatres and the horror there, the idea that you could stream and charge more internationally to get some at least some money to the, for those who need it during this impossible period, I would have thought that was a good thought. I mean, it seems sensible because a lot of people have been tuning into these performances on the small screen. I know it doesn't, isn't, and I certainly not. I haven't had that much time, so I've only seen a couple. But it's just a thought that if you give a worldwide audience the chance at least of seeing a production, however imperfect, it could mean more money.
Exactly. And sadly, in a capitalist world, that's what the bottom line tends to be. Never mind. Let's step away from that. Let's not go ideological, because if you want to actually access another film critic, I know, another one other than Richard Fitzwilliams. Well, Richard has co-presented with respect to this one on a previous midweek drive. That's Robin Pierce. Robin is currently running through Shocktober for, I think, the 11th year, in which he's going through 30 of the Universal movie classics and before, starting with Nosferatu. One per day, effectively screening in a screen along with his own comments as well. So you see, there's always a look back, really.
There is, though, of course, with me, as you know, there's the bullet in the Royal Society Portrait Painters annual show, which has now just finished most successfully, and so glad we got it hung at the Mall Galleries. And then, of course, there's also an endless stream of royal news, usually linked in some way
to Harry and Meghan.
To Harry and Meghan, and indeed. I mean, it is quite extraordinary because I find myself...
Richard, I mean, it's good news because the Kardashians reality series comes to an end and Harry and Meghan are straight in there for another reality TV show. Fantastic.
Well, you see, on the one hand, I do think that they still have the potential to do a great deal of good and something I fear they didn't realise...
May I cite George Bernard Shaw at this moment, the classic George Bernard Shaw quote, "Whom the gods would destroy, they first say, they have potential."
Well, that's a rather bizarre quote. I didn't know it, because they certainly have potential. They didn't realize that as senior working royals, they might, in a mixture of Netflix, the speakers' engagements that they'll be doing, and also Archwell, which they can launch once the pandemic is over. That may well be some time. And, of course, eventually, I would not be surprised, since she is extremely articulate and committed, that Meghan goes into politics in the political life in America. I mean, it's run by...
Yeah, but I mean, we're looking forward to at least another 20 years of
that
Donald.
That is looking forward about that, yes, exactly. No, I mean, it just seems to me something that might very well happen. But so far as their handling, for example, of Finding Freedom, I mean, that is just surreal. You'd think that this was a comedy all of its own, because these two journos who were admirers of them began the book roughly a couple, well, plus, 2 years plus ago. Harry and Meghan first said, "We haven't cooperated officially," there, and also we haven't given interviews. Then it was discovered that in one of the author's notes, they were approached, they were trying to get round this, so that it was just on official occasions. Then, when this book chock full of intimate details, but a load of trashy, gossipy, unsourced nonsense with no index, actually got published with all sorts of, you know, what the first date was like and what
It's the 21st century version of Cry Freedom, the classic movie about Nelson Mandela, isn't it?
Yes, the word freedom in the title, I wasn't even going to go into that. Stupid. But it wasn't just that, it was the fact there wasn't a whimper about privacy invasion.
No,
Then
of course
the book
not.
Was published. Then we had these, well, there was the serialization in the Times, which had rather extraordinary headlines, I thought. And then, of course, it's become involved in this court case.
Richard, let's be kind to Meghan and Harry.
Well, I am when they, in my opinion, merit it, and not when, in my opinion, they don't.
Yeah. Well, there we are. They'll probably be rocking on in their own way, but perhaps not after they collided. Still, never mind. We'll forget all about it, like an Artemisia. Never mind, Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed.
Back again next week?
Certainly so.
Better way to actually ease from Richard Fitzwilliams to Robin Pierce, one reviewer to another reviewer, one in Shocktober, one in Artemisia, and as he actually said, major thumbs down to After We Collided. Oh well, never mind. Robin Pierce, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And a hearty good morning to you from windswept Wales.
Storm Alex, of course, is doing business.
Alex. You have actually finally made it. You are the coming storm.
Yeah, the ongoing storm. Let's go to Gallifrey. It's very confusing. Never mind. What are you going to review for us today in terms of the historical infrastructure of past Midweek Drives and Midweek Drive Morning Editions?
Well, I went back in time, like I always do, Not too far, though. I only went as far back as October the 1st, because in scanning your Southside Broadcasting Podbean menu, I always look for something that, ooh, this is interesting, and there's so much to choose from, but there's always one that kind of piques my interest more than the others. And as it was International Coffee Day on October the 1st...
A week ago.
And coffee, of course, is something that is very close to my heart, especially now I've just had a mug of it. I decided that's where I would descend. So it was Elma Fudd was never on the program. Emma Lewisell. And she was discussing coffee and the various blends and the beans and the fair trade. And I found that very interesting because over the past few years, and I can't actually figure when it started. When I was a child, and maybe it was the same with you, Alex, we were definitely a tea society. Coffee was only available as, you know, camp coffee, which was basically a mixture of coffee and chicory, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, it was like, you know, posh drink, rarely drunk around here anyway. But we're definitely becoming more of a coffee culture than a tea culture. And I think, I don't know what I can attribute this to, whether it's the overall
Americanization
of our culture. I know when I started seriously drinking coffee, and I do attribute it to American culture, it was watching the first run of Twin Peaks, where Agent
Damn
Dale
good
Cooper
cherry pie.
And a mug of Deep Black Joe.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, Deep Black Joe, coffee. I actually like the sound of that. And he drinks it black. And I tried it, and I have never looked back. Coffee is my drink of choice. First drink of the morning has to be coffee. Nothing else will do.
People might start saying you're an addict, Robin.
No.
I dare you to go 1 week caffeine-free.
You know what? This is strange, okay? If I ever came down with, you know, a bad cold or the flu, as sometimes happens, coffee is the first thing I go off. So it can be done. So I was definitely on the same page as Emma. Then you got William Sitwell, who vocally, vehemently decried
milk
in tea and coffee.
Absolutely. Don't do it.
I'm not going to go down the road of the phrase that William used, but I feel exactly the same way. I will drink milk by the pint. Just do not put it in my tea or my coffee. Sweeteners? Yes. Milk? Get out of here. I would like to know exactly, what is Taro Masalata?
Why is it
pink?
Well,
would I drink it or would I eat it?
You would eat it, and it's basically a wonderful Greek concoction, which is all to do with seafood.
See, I'm showing my ignorance here. When I heard the word pink Taro Masalata, I thought, the first thing I thought was, ooh, dessert.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can have smoked salmon Taro Masalata. You can have Taro Masalata on its own. It's basically, there is a big campaign in terms of, even Delia Smith has actually gone to her Delia Online thing with her question mark, whatever happened to real Taro Masalata? Unfortunately, it has been eclipsed by the counterfeit pink blancmange coloured variety that is mass produced. It's made from Tarama, in Greek, that's Greek, the salted and cured roe of the cod, okay? That's the roe of the cod, carp or grey mullet. Mixed with olive oil, lemon juice, and a starchy base of bread or potatoes, or sometimes almonds. Variants may include garlic, spring onions or peppers, or vinegar instead of lemon juice.
I'm not too keen on mullet, either to eat or to have as a hairstyle.
Thick, creamy Greek dip made from olive oil, fish roe, breadcrumbs and seasonings, according to BBC Food.
Ooh. just had breakfast and now I'm beginning to feel peckish again. Stop doing this. Jack Meggett Phillips and the Adventures of Ebenezer Tweezer.
Mm. 511 years of age.
A young 511 years of age. He has a carnivorous beast, and the beast wants to eat the worst child in the world.
Mm.
Now, before Jack, who wrote the book that this is that we're talking about, called I Do Believe the Beast and the Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
Before he mentioned that Warner Brothers have optioned it.
Yes.
And
it'll never be made, of course, not at these socially conditioned times. I mean, Bond's gone back another few months, you know. There we are.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said optioned. See? See?
Yes.
I know the phrase all
exactly.
The time, people. When he was describing the plot, the first thing that went into my head, and I'm hoping that Warners, if they so choose, go this way, it is screaming to be an animation like, say, in the style of The Corpse Bride or Coraline or Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm.
And it needs to be directed and visualized by Tim Burton.
Mm.
I mean, can't you just see that?
Either that or possibly Pan's Labyrinth director.
Oh, Del Toro.
Mm. Alessandro Del Toro.
Del Toro, if it was live action. Tim Burton, if it was animation.
There we are, then.
If you ever get to talk to him again, I would love to hear what Jack would think of my...
We'll do that. Mm. Would you like a little sneak reveal for just yourself and the listener, Robin,
okay,
about Jack, etc.?
I
actually, if you listen back, you'll find that I asked him to introduce himself. That's because I actually forgot who the heck he was at the end of the Zoom package. I know, it was just one of those crazy things where the line had come through saying, so-and-so's in the Zoom panel. I thought, oh, right, I'm doing this, then fair enough. Right, what am I doing? And in betwixt times, I was radically trying to actually sort of pull up the necessary details so I could actually work through that. I think I probably just about got away with it.
I think you did, because I didn't know until you spilled it out now.
Yeah, there you are, you see. I sometimes feel as though, you know, we just need to make full disclosure, really.
Okay, I've got a little bit of a full disclosure to do later on.
Whoa.
But we went on to Natalie Jameson. And another thing close to my heart, TV theme tunes. Mm. I love TV theme tunes.
And yet you score so poorly when we have the competitions here.
I know, because it's not my era, is it?
You keep
giving me kids' TV programs
from
when I was working. So, you know, really.
Yeah, and Boo obviously appreciates that as well. And
She does. Maybe she's warning us that the postman is sneaking up on the house.
Perhaps she wants Lassie. I'll do my best.
TV theme songs. Back in my younger days, in my early teens, I used to set up a cassette recorder to record TV theme tunes of programs that I liked. I don't know if you ever did anything like that.
Home taping is killing music. You get a knock on the door from the...
You couldn't even buy soundtracks.
I know, but, you know, I'm just going for the totalitarianists who'd say, you shouldn't do that.
Some of those Jerry Goldsmith themes of the 70s.
Hmm.
I was like the Banachek theme as well. But in listening to Natalie, and, you know, this is a bad patch for TV theme songs, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, hum for me the theme music of Arrow or Flash or any of the... You just can't, because it's non-existent. But that's not always the case, because I think that the best TV theme of recent years was a sweeping score to a series I never even watched. I heard the score on an FM station playing the classics, if you get my drift. And it was Downton Abbey. I love the score. Wouldn't dream of watching the program, but, you know, there you go. But if you had to choose, Alex, the top two TV theme songs, most catchy, most memorable, once heard, never forgotten, what would you go for?
Man from Uncle and Danger Man.
See, I don't even remember the Danger Man one. Oh. But the Man from U.N.C.L.E. actually changed every season.
Yes.
I've noticed that.
Yeah. Well, it changed.
It's the same backbeat, but there's
a jazzy one. Danger Man was clearly this. otherwise known in the United States as Secret Agent.
Alex.
Mm-hmm.
I've been whistling that to myself for years with no clue where it came from.
Well, there we are. It's the theme to Danger Man.
Ah! Oh, very much an Avengers kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Laurie Johnson obviously did some great things with the Avengers and New Avengers.
Well, did he?
He did, yes.
Oh,
but
there we are,
no, actually, he didn't do Danger Man. That was somebody completely different.
Now, my top two, which I have never forgotten, and they're instantly recognisable, are Classic Addams Family by Vic Mizzi and Batman, Neil Hefti.
Hmm.
Those are the ones that, you as soon as you've heard them, you will never, ever forget them. And here's an odd story. They needed a theme for Batman. Neil Hefti had forgotten all about it. They went up to him and said, have you got that score yet? And during his lunch hour, he just thought the word Batman, put a backbeat to it, and there you go. Lyrics as well.
Exactly.
Go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Of course, it was Edwin Astley who did the theme tune to Danger Man, just as he did the theme tune to The Saint.
You see, this is something, I mean, it's just as well I'm not on Zoom right now, because you would see me grinning from ear to ear like the Joker.
Mm.
But this is something that completely befuddles me, because I've got my notes in front of me here at my desk in the study in North Wales.
Mm.
You are presumably in the hospital radio studio in Middlesbrough.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know which show I've listened to.
Mm.
You have no access to my notes.
Mm.
We don't discuss these segments beforehand.
No.
And yet, as soon as I mention a piece of music, it's played instantly.
That's what it's all about, you see.
As I said... I'm working with a professional here, obviously.
This one is for Bo. Heart-rending, the theme to Lassie, of course. Classic, classic.
Does it sound well?
Yeah, but unlike Skippy, of course, Lassie couldn't necessarily communicate in the same...
Oh, this is true.
Yeah.
And, of course, you had Maureen Robinson in charge of it all as well.
She's the one, exactly.
She, right.
I hadn't realised she also made a guest appearance in Bewitched until I was seeing that series again recently.
Oh, I've got that to watch.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, we went on then with Marcel Somerville and Cindy Williams. Now, Marcel is coping with...
Type 1.
Unexpected type 1 diabetes. And I fully sympathise with him as having been diagnosed with diabetes myself, type 2. It is a shock, and it is something that you need to... change your lifestyle in order to adapt to. Now, Marcel with type 1 is, of course, a more serious case than I am. And, you know, my full sympathies to
him. He's at the crossroads.
Now, that's another thing that you kept mentioning, which I didn't quite get, but I'm going to come to in just a second.
Mm.
Cindy Williams was talking about the app to help cope with type 1. And, of course, Marcel said, it's like having a diabetic nurse in your pocket.
Mm. I suspect he actually meant a nurse who actually could treat diabetes and give advice about diabetes rather than
a nurse who was diabetic.
Exactly, yeah. But I didn't want to push it. I figured he was on a Love Island trip. He's been on Love Island. Once you've done that, I think you need as much help as possible, personally.
Love Island, nothing that I
not a great theme tune either.
Watching. Okay.
Love Boat, on the other hand.
Oh, my goodness. No. Anyway, he mentioned Crossroads, and in
great
music,
series with Noel Gordon, of course, but not this one.
I thought that you were talking about the old Tony Hatch theme the series with Noel Gordon.
Down, 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 down,
that's
down,
the
down,
one,
down, down, down,
down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down,
down, down, down, down,
listen to Crossroads, the Marcel Somerville one, it was another new world.
Ah, the East Midlands Motel with Sandy in the wheelchair, Faye the secretary, Frigid of course, and of course Noel Gordon and Ronald Allen as David Hunter. Let's not forget Sue Lloyd, of course, a best mate of Annette Andre. Sadly, Sue no longer with us, but there we go.
That's going to be in my head all day now. Thank you for nothing.
Oh, that's all right.
Oh, no more.
Yeah.
And we finished off with Louise Ross. Stoptober, not Shocktober.
No,
Stoptober.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I thought it's a good thing to help people stop smoking. I am frankly amazed that people still smoke, especially in the days of COVID-19, which is a respiratory illness. Why would you want to make your lungs even weaker?
Yes, I think we managed to sort out the fake news in the early days of COVID, where lots of smokers actually said you needed to smoke to actually kill the virus. No, that's silly and crazy.
Well, inhaling smoke is always deadly. Mm. I mean, this is why I've never done it. This, okay, dear listener, please dismiss my rantings here as the pious outpourings of a lifelong non-smoker, but, you want to stay alive. Don't inhale smoke. It's a bad idea. The fire brigade will tell you that. Mm-hmm. So, contributor of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to go with Jack Meggett Phillips.
There you go.
Because
even though Pam Ayres actually read out some of her poetry. Anyway.
We are going to hear so much more from him.
Hmm.
I want to see this film made. I want to read the book. His concept, I am completely sold on.
So in the same way as back in the day when we were the first radio station to interview Jamie Bell, you'd say in the same way Jack is also going to be another one of our Southside Siren Radio success stories.
Oh. I hope so.
Well, that's pretty much wrapped up everything apart from the theme to Love Boat, which of course is... You can see those wonderful clean whites now, can't you? The cheesy grins and smiles.
I was going to say, this is love, cheesier than cheese on toast.
Exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you. And love, life's sweetest reward. Let it flow. It floats back to you. The love boat soon we'll be making another run. The love boat.
A whole new word for awesome there, basically, Robin, but never mind.
Well, it's a whole new word for something.
Hmm. We didn't actually talk about other sort of routines, and I have to say that other honourable mentions that were put in terms of great TV themes of our time, notice we didn't go for DuckTales or indeed Rugrats or any of the things Natalie Jameson was going for. I would also put in two thumbs up clearly, as I mentioned in the piece, for both Thunderbirds and the Wild Wild West, and of course Bonanza.
What about, I The iconic theme for Lost in Space is the first two seasons, but I actually feel that season three is a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it also is a slightly more upbeat and up-tempo line in general, but then... What's not to love about a boy and his robot?
That's ridiculous, because that was an off-the-cuff remark I made,
yeah.
And you just brought up that...
Yeah.
I'm going to sit with you in the studio one day, and I'm going to see how you do this.
Mm-hmm. We have the power from the whole
system. I mean, I haven't even got it written down anywhere, so wherever you've got a hidden camera in the study, it can't have picked it up.
Mm.
Unless you're like Professor Xavier.
I think that is important, because when all's said and done, no matter what time we actually happen to be referring to in our great experience that we happen to call life, ultimately, when the button is actually pressed and we hear those magical words...
Zebedee arrived. Time for bed, I think, he said. Already, said Florence.
Yeah, I think I'd like to have that played at my funeral, really. So you need, really. That's it.
Yeah,
already,
yeah,
said Florence.
Says it all.
Yeah. So, Robin, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It's been fun as usual, Alex. Thank you.
And I take it you'll be back again in the very near future?
Most certainly.
Would you like some Little House on the Prairie or Rod Stewart?
Oh, Rod Stewart, please.
Once again, Michael Landon has to give a little bit of time over to the Rodster, and here he comes.